Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by. We're about to begin. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Alpek's first quarter 2017 earnings conference call. With us this morning, we have from Alpek, José Valdés, CEO, Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernán Lozano, Head of Investor Relations, who will discuss the company's performance and any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. I will now hand the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome. We very much appreciate everyone's participation today. This call will be divided into two parts. First, Mr. Valdés, our CEO, and Mr. Escalante, our CFO, will provide a general overview of Alpek's first quarter 2017 performance. Afterwards, we will open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Pepe Valdés.
Thank you, Hernán. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. First quarter results were better than expected, as some of the anticipated headwinds were partially offset by certain positive developments in our particularly in our plastic and chemical segment, and higher feedstock prices. We were pleased to see caprolactam reference margins reach their highest level since 2012, as well as polypropylene and expandable polystyrene margins above guidance, in particular during January. Moreover, our polyester segment results were broadly in line with expectations of a gradual recovery after extraordinary events that affected profitability during the fourth quarter. First quarter results also benefited from a rising feedstock price environment. The average U.S. paraxylene contract price posted the highest level since 2015, and the U.S. propylene contract price rallied 65% between December and March amid the refinery turnaround season. Despite the recent favorable price trends, we maintain a cautious view towards feedstock price volatility as the latest propylene price trends point towards a decrease in coming months. The same situation happened with styrene. We saw a significant increase in the first two, three months of the year, and is now prices of styrene monomer also, you know, trending lower. A lower polypropylene price in North America could cause a temporary distortion on margins and demand. However, it would also close the gap with the price of propylene in Asia and reduce the region's risk from imports. We will continue to follow propylene and other feedstock price trends and act accordingly to reduce their impact on our business. On the investment front, organic projects such as the Altamira cogeneration plant and the integrated Corpus Christi integrated PTA/PET site continue to move forward. Our power plant is on track to begin operations before year-end 2018, and the latest information we have from M&G indicates a PET plant start up in coming months. During the first quarter, M&G received from Alpek a final tranche of $30 million as additional support for the project. Furthermore, we completed the construction of our two propylene storage spheres, moving on to the commissioning and startup phase as planned. We are also preparing for a shutdown. In fact, we are right now in the middle of a shutdown to interconnect the 75,000 ton per year EPS capacity expansion in Altamira, which is expected to begin operations before year-end. Mechanical completion we estimate around August and commercial startup of the plant around November 2017. Regarding the potential acquisition in Brazil, I will highlight two significant developments since our last call. The first one is Petrobras obtained approval from its shareholders to sell Petroquímica Suape and CTP to Alpek. Two, Alpek obtained all necessary corporate approvals to acquire Petrochimica Suape for $385 million, payable on the closing date for the two companies on a debt-free basis. The next milestone in the acquisition process is to obtain approval from the Administrative Council for Economic Defense, or CADE, in Brazil. It's our understanding that this is typically a multi-month process, and we will be providing updates on any news related to this matter. And at this point, I would like to turn the call over to Eduardo, who will discuss our financial results in more detail. Eduardo?
Thank you, Pepe, and good morning, everyone. The first quarter was marked by a strong feedstock price environment. The average U.S. paraxylene and propylene contract prices increased 20% and 52% respectively when compared with the first quarter 2016. In this context, Alpek's first quarter consolidated revenue was up 9% year-on-year, despite flat volume. Besides increasing our top line, higher feedstock prices also resulted in a $26 million non-cash inventory gain that benefited EBITDA. First quarter consolidated EBITDA was $158 million. 8% lower year-on-year, but up 19% versus 4Q16. Adjusting for inventory gains, Alpek's first quarter 2017 comparable consolidated EBITDA was $131 million, down 26% versus a year ago, and 12% higher than the previous quarter. This was above our estimates for comparable EBITDA to reach $502 million by year-end. Similar to the trend in comparable consolidated EBITDA, our two business segments posted year-on-year declines and sequential improvement. In the case of polyester, first quarter comparable EBITDA was down 19% versus 1Q16, as moderate growth in PTA, fibers, and cogeneration was more than offset by lower PET margins, in line with Alpek's 2017 guidance. Comparable polyester EBITDA was 4% higher than the previous quarter, which was negatively impacted by disruptions associated to Hurricane Matthew. A smaller loss at Selenis Canada also contributed to the sequential growth. First quarter comparable plastics and chemicals EBITDA of $63 million was above Alpek's 2017 guidance, driven by the recent upswing in caprolactam margins and better than expected polypropylene and expandable polystyrene results in January. Comparable plastics and chemicals EBITDA was down 34% versus the segment's record 1Q16 figure due to the anticipated decline in polypropylene margins. In contrast, all the segment's products posted sequential EBITDA growth. Moving down on the P&L, Alpek's first quarter consolidated majority net income was $87 million, up 20% year-on-year. This quarter's lower operating income and higher income taxes were more than offset by a non-cash foreign exchange gain recognized as a result of the recent Mexican peso's appreciation. Regarding our balance sheet and certain cash flow items, net debt was $1.175 billion, up 30% year-over-year, with a net debt to EBITDA ratio of 1.8 times and interest coverage of 10 times. On an absolute basis, net debt increased $134 million year-to-date. The largest cash flow items in the first quarter were dividends, CapEx, and net working capital. Dividends include $72 million paid to shareholders in March, as approved at our annual shareholder meeting. This quarter's $76 million CapEx reflects the ongoing development of strategic projects, with the Altamira Cogeneration Project accounting for almost 70% of total investments in the first quarter. Net working capital is the only line item that was higher than expected. The rise in feedstock price environment has required additional investment, mainly in our polyester segment. I would now like to wrap up the call with a few comments on potential funding for the Brazilian acquisition, as we are focused on finding alternatives to minimize debt financing for this transaction. We have engaged a financial advisor and started the formal process to monetize at least a portion of our cogeneration assets in the coming months. Besides the funding this could provide for the Brazilian acquisition, an attractive valuation should unlock shareholder value at the Alpek level. We believe that acquiring the Brazilian assets with minimal debt financing is in our shareholders' best interest, as it allows Alpek to maintain a low cost of capital by preserving its investment grade rating. This concludes my remarks, and now I would like to open the call for questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 to be placed into the queue. We first go to looks like we have a Nicolaj Lippmann with Morgan Stanley. Due to no response, we'll move to our next, Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse.
Hi, thanks. Good morning. Thank you for the call. My question is regarding the margins in polyester. In the press release, I think you mentioned that PET was a little bit weaker than you expected. So I was wondering if you can provide more color on what is driving the lower U.S. margins in PET that seem to be lagging your original estimates, and what are your expectations as we get closer to the opening of operations of that Corpus Christi plant? Thanks.
Okay, Vanessa. Mainly the main factor that has taking a small hit in our margins in PET has been the increasing price of one of the comonomers that we use to produce PET, and this is in particular the IPA, and which has increased significantly over the last 5-6 months. And normally we do have in some cases sort of cost plus formulas, and this raw material is not included in those formulas. Okay, so this has been probably the factor that has impacted our margins to a certain extent. At this point, we are looking at different alternatives and strategies to see how we can recover the increase of this IPA.
By how much, Pepe, has IPA increased in price?
Well, it's moving, you know, every month. I think during the first quarter, the impact was probably $10 to $15 per ton. But, it could be higher at the end of the first quarter. It could be 1 cent per pound, something like that. So we're, as I mentioned, looking ways for ways to increase prices to compensate for this increase in the cost.
Okay. And was this a move that you were not expecting when you budgeted guidance?
Correct. This was an unexpected change, and has to do apparently mostly with the unavailability of raw material to produce this IPA, which is methacillin. And there have been some operating problems, I think, and you know, it will probably take a while to return to normal. But you're right, we were not expecting, at least not expecting, an increase in this order of magnitude.
Okay, Pepe, sorry that maybe this is a very basic question, but what's the percentage of the total cost that IPA traditionally represented of PET?
It's really very small, Vanessa. It's really very small, but the price change has been so dramatic that, you know, that it becomes noticeable. And that's the reason we normally don't include that in the formulas, because it's not very relevant normally. And in particular, you know, price of IPA, moves similarly to the prices of PTA. So since we have the PTA in the formula and then on the normal circumstances, they sort of both go together. But in this case was a disconnection between the both, which is the one that is impacting our results.
Okay, is there any substitute for this product?
There are substitutes, but no one easy to replace immediately. I mean, if this were to last for a long time, yeah, there would be other actions that could be taken.
Okay, Pepe, thank you. That helps.
You're welcome, Vanessa.
We next move to Felipe Santos with J.P. Morgan.
Yes, thank you. The question is about the new plant that is being constructed. How you see the startup and the expectations for its contributions in terms of EBITDA and margins for this year and the next. The second question is on PP prices. Compared to your guidance, what you're seeing yet in terms of guidance of margins, for PP going forward, if you still stick to your 18 cents margin that you saw in December, or it has moved upwards? Thank you.
Okay, well, let me just make sure I understood your first question. Your first question is about Corpus Christi project?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Okay. Look, the project is advancing, as we mentioned before, but we have not included any EBITDA coming from that project during this year. We estimate, M&G expects this PET plant to start early third quarter this year, but we are not including any EBITDA coming from this project until next year.
Okay.
So that in that sense, we're being very conservative. With regards to your question to PP, it's a very good question, actually. It's very relevant, because as probably you heard at the beginning of this discussion, the price of propylene, just to give you an idea, the propylene prices, the monomer, the raw material for polypropylene, ended the year at 31.5 cents per pound. And that was at the end of, in December 16. In the first quarter this year, we experienced a very significant surge in prices that took the price of this propylene all the way up to 52 cents, in March. So it was a very rapid, very significant increase. And I guess that the good news for us is number one, of course, normally when the price of raw materials increase like that, we do have a benefit, which has to do with the revaluation of the inventories. Okay, so we did enjoy that benefit, as we also explained. But the problem with the prices increase so fast is normally your margins tend to fall because you don't have the speed to increase your prices as rapidly as your material. Again, the good news is that we were able to increase our prices to fully compensate for the increase in the raw material, which again gives you some idea of the fundamental strength of the market of polypropylene. Okay, so we were successful in as you say, getting to this 18-cent margin or a little bit more, to maintain that margin during these first 3 months, with, you know, in spite of that significant increase in raw materials. Now we are facing the other part of, you know, that now there's going to be a change in propylene prices coming down. And the challenge each year, for us, that means, you know, now we have the opposite problem, because we do have a devaluation of the inventory, which, although it does not impact us in cash, it does impact our EBITDA. But hopefully now, the opportunity would be that since we have lower prices, which are more competitive versus Asia, and will make us more competitive as well versus other plastics, hopefully these will, at some point in time, if prices, you know, go lower and stay low, it will probably mean that we will probably have a chance of increasing the margin of the polypropylene in the months to come. Some of the experts, some of the consultants are considering perhaps June, July, we could see an improvement of approximately 3 cents per pound in the margin. And remember, for every 1 cent per pound increase in margin of polypropylene, that represents like $10 million EBITDA per year. So we do are hopeful that prices remain low for propylene. You know, 2-3 months from now, we will be able to see an improvement in our margins from the 18 cents that we were, you know, including in our guidance, to hopefully 20, 21 cents per pound. So I hope this answers your question.
Yes, it was perfect. Just one point to understand. Beginning of your answer, you mentioned that you could see a similar impact on inventories in the second quarter, but this would, of course, depend on the evolution of the propylene prices, right? If they stay low,
yes,
you're not going to have this impact, no?
Well, the thing is, the 52 cents per pound we ended in March. We don't have, as far as I know, we don't have a price yet for April in propylene, but it will go down to low 40s, I guess. So we will have a significant reduction. And here, of course, the key for us is how we manage inventories and all those things. And we were expecting this reduction in price. So hopefully we will be able to minimize the loss of inventories. It will be certainly less than what we increase in it will be less, you know, the devaluation will be less than what we revalue the inventory in the first quarter. But there will be an impact. And of course, the other opportunity for us is to lag the price reductions of polypropylene so we can, you know, make a little bit more margin. So these are the things that normally play. But also you have to be aware that when prices are coming down, we normally experience a decrease in volume because our customers wait and reduce their inventories, assuming that the prices will be lower next month. So it's a complicated process. We're trying to optimize that, to manage that as well as we can. But the important thing in the long term is, I would say, if in the long term, in the case of propylene, we can have, you know, more stable and lower prices, that will give us an opportunity at this point in time with the market conditions that we have to increase the margin. And we do expect that at least for the next 6 months, the propylene prices will be, you know, at a more normal level. In winter months, what happens with propylene, particularly first quarter, you have a lot of turnarounds in refineries. When you have a turnaround in refineries, the refineries obviously produce less propylene. And the other impact is in the winter months, propane, which is raw material to produce polypropylene via propane dehydrogenation, and through crackers, The problem is, particularly with the crackers, as opposed to using an ethane-propane mix, they reduce the propane because it becomes more expensive and go to ethane. And when you run the cracker with ethane, you produce less propylene. So both from the refining operation and from the cracker operation, the supply of propylene is normally reduced during the first months of the year. And as I said, the good news is that that is behind us, and right now, you know, refineries start operating at higher rates, and the propane is propane prices are more reasonable, and that means they are used as feedstock to crackers and the PDHs.
Perfect. This was excellent. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
We next move to Diego Mendez with Itaú.
Yes, good morning. My first question is related to caprolactam margins. You have been very negative for some time, but it seems that that there was an improvement during this quarter. So if you could mention what triggered that improvement and how should margins behave going forward. And the second question is related to the financing or to the ways that you're finding to finance the acquisition of PQS. So what is the target net debt to EBITDA that would make you and the credit agencies comfortable in order to maintain the investment grade rating? Or in other ways, what is the amount that you really need to raise in order not to lose investment grade? Thank you.
Okay. Let me answer the first question, and second question I will ask Eduardo to help me with that, with your answer. In terms of caprolactam, we have experienced a significant increase in margins since November last year, and so far these margins have been maintained up until at least March. And part of the reason, there's a lot of potential causes of this, but one of them is the fact that a lot of the production of caprolactam these days is located in China, and during the winter months and due to pollution, some of the plants producing this product in China are have a lot of pressure to reduce their output so that they reduce emissions as well. So that's one of the factors that has been mentioned by the consultants, by the specialists, and on the one hand. On the other hand, it is also true that margins have been very low for quite some time. And so there was also sort of an incentive, I guess, from the different producers to reduce rates in order to improve margins. I mean, most of the producers of caprolactam are losing money at cash cost. So there is always that. They're always looking for an opportunity to try consolidate to improve the margins. So I think both factors came into play, and I think that explains the improvement in the margins that we experience. We start again to hear, and again starting to hear from consultants, that they foresee that margins over the next 2-3 years shall be better than the margin we experienced last year. In last year, just to give you an example, the margin of caprolactam over benzene in Asia go to around $600 per ton. In this recent improvement in margins, they went up to $1,100 per ton. So it's not that we're expecting that the $1,100 will be maintained, but we are expecting that we will not see again soon the $600 per ton margin. As I say, this is this can change quickly, but that is the expectation again of the experts, and perhaps we will expect to see margin over the next months somewhere between $800 and $1,000. Not as high, as I said, as we saw it in February this year at $1,100. But certainly not as bad as what we experienced most of last year at 600. So that is our position with regards to caprolactam margins. Now, as I mentioned, I will ask PQF finance to be explained by Eduardo what we want to accomplish. let me just make something very clear to you. For us, it's very important to maintain our investment grade rating, and we are going to find ways of doing that. I mean, one way or another, we have several alternatives we're looking at. One of those being the cogeneration divestment, but we are looking at some other alternatives as well. And perhaps ask Eduardo to explain to you in a little bit more detail.
Sure, sure. Thank you, Pepe, and thank you, Diego, for your question. Let me give you a little bit of context. In the guidance for 2017, the target that we have for net leverage is 2 to 2.1 times net debt to EBITDA. However, the mandate that we have from our board of directors is to maintain a ratio of less than 2.5 times. Of course, the guidance does not consider the Brazilian acquisition. And as Pepe mentioned, we are committed to maintaining an attractive net leverage in order to be able to maintain our investment grade rating. So the idea is to minimize as much as possible. In fact, we are trying not to increase any debt in order to make this acquisition without putting additional pressure in our balance sheet. The acquisition is as has been announced, is $385 million for 100% of the equity, debt free of the companies, and the most important initiative that we have, as Pepe just mentioned, and we mentioned at the beginning of the call, is to monetize at least part of our cogeneration assets. How much we will be able to capture, I think it's still early to tell, but we feel the largest portion of the amount, hopefully as large as possible, will come from this initiative. We have found that there is a very big appetite in the Mexican market for this type of power assets, in particular the Cosoleacaque cogeneration plant, which I'm sure you recall has been operating already for the last couple of years. So we feel we are in a very good position to be able to capture a significant portion of the $385 million to this cogeneration, the monetization of these cogeneration assets. In addition to that, we are also looking at some other alternatives, like a future reduction in our dividends, at least until we're able to get a stable cash flow from our operations. We are also exploring, and I would say this is the lower priority item, but we are also exploring the possibility of having a minority equity partner in the venture, in particular somebody who could bring some local knowledge and local relations. So all in all, we are certainly committed to being able to finance this acquisition without any additional debt.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Diego.
Next question comes from Luis Carvajal with UBS.
Hey, guys. Hey, Pepe, Eduardo, Hernan.
Hi.
Basically, I have two questions here. Looking to you, the guidance that you provided us late last year, and also looking not only for the first quarter results, but listening to Pepe that Corpus Christi plant is not included in the guidance and so on, seems to us that you'd say there are basically two scenarios that I would like to hear from you guys. Do you think that 2017 guidance is a bit more conservative looking forward to the current scenario, or by keeping it, I mean, do you still expect some challenges throughout the second half of the year? And I mean, you're basically keeping where we are now. So I just would like to understand a bit better the visibility that you have about the guidance provided for this year. And also on top of this question, also if you can provide us some color on the first month of the second quarter in terms of the spreads, in terms of inventors' behavior, that would be good. And just one last question. Regarding the Brazilian acquisition that you mentioned, and I understand the limitations here, just a matter of timing, when do you expect to provide some further details in terms of EBITDA generation, CapEx, and so on? Thank you.
Okay, Luis, your first question was about the fact that we're not including any, let's say, EBITDA or any revenue of the new PET plant startup in Corpus. I do believe that yes, we're perhaps being a little bit conservative on that. But remember, when you start off plants, particularly plants, you know, of this magnitude, there is always, number one, there is always delays. Number one. Number two, you know, at the startup, you have to for a while be operating with two plants. I mean, until this plant really reaches a steady state and reliability, you cannot shut down in our case, perhaps when we start Corpus, we have to make other adjustments in other plants, and conversions. So the fact is that, for a while we're going to be operating with two plants, which sort of are of redundant, so you have two fixed costs and everything. So the very initial stages of the project, I don't believe will generate a lot of additional EBITDA. So that's why we have not included that in our guidance. Of course, if the startup goes very smoothly, then of course we could be having some positive impact. But as I say, it is normal that these plants take some time to be running, you know, the way they should. Okay.
My point was that, I mean, on top of the Corpus Christi plant, but the first quarter was a bit better than expected. So,
yes.
Even though
you are right. I mean, it was better than expected, and we probably believe that there might be opportunities in the third and fourth quarter. Second quarter, we don't see it very, very strong as a result of, number one, I mentioned, raw materials are coming down, and that will have an impact in our devaluation of inventories. So it will be a little bit the opposite of what we saw in first quarter, although, as I mentioned, not as strong. So we'll expect a little bit negative impact of valuation of inventories in second quarter. I would say that's perhaps the most important reason for second quarter. Third quarter and fourth quarter, I think you're right. I think we could be performing better than guidance in second and third quarters. But honestly, I would like to wait. We would like to wait until the next conference to be able to share that or change the guidance if we believe that that's necessary. And what was your last question, Luis?
Was about the timing about any guidance on the Brazilian acquisition in terms of EBITDA, CapEx, and so on.
Look, on that as well, I think we would like to reserve our comments for the next conference when we have more information. We are right now still following up on that, and we will be able, I think, to give you a better picture, end of next quarter. But I can also tell you that we do not expect any significant impact in EBITDA this year. Okay, I think it's going to take a little bit longer. First of all, because this CADE approval might take 6 months. or in that range. So that we start the CADE review in May. So 6 months after that, you're talking November, December. So again, I don't expect a significant impact of EBITDA from PQS during the remaining of this year.
Okay. Yeah, clear. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Next question comes from Vicente Falanga with Bank of America.
Thank you, Pepe Eduardo Hernan. I had three questions. First of all, are the operations in the U.S. already fully recovered from the force majeure? Is there any incremental result that we could expect for the second quarter? My second question would be, what sort of minority stake would Alpek be willing to sell at Swappy? You know, could it be something as big as 49% or something like very minor, like 10-15%? And then finally, if you guys have any time horizon target to conclude the sale of COSO, and if you could just talk a bit about the level of interest that you've been getting from potential buyers. Thank you very much.
Okay. And your question with regards to operation of our U.S. assets, yes, our U.S. assets have fully recovered from the hurricane in fourth quarter, Matthew. During the fourth quarter and first quarter of this year, we had a scheduled shutdown of two of our major PET lines in the U.S. And that is part of the situation is because remember PET demand is the lowest, is at its lowest level in the winter months. So we already went through shutdowns for those two lines. So we still have some shutdowns of some of the smaller lines in second quarter. But yes, I believe we're gonna significantly improve our operation capabilities and results in the months to come. We are certainly done the most difficult maintenance in the last 4 or 5 months. So the operation should we do expect an improvement, particularly PET assets. But the only reason I don't want to be more bullish on that is this issue I just mentioned about the IPA.
Okay.
To Vanessa, right? So that's the only caveat in my optimism, but for sure, our sales volumes are going to improve, and the operation of the plant is right now. I mean, in particular in March, I think we have the best operating month ever in terms of capacity utilization, in terms of yields and cost of our assets. So, it really, March was very encouraging for all of us because you know it's right after we finish the shutdowns, and we are We're certainly ramping up, and we're having much stronger results in the operational side.
Okay, good.
Your question and let me ask the question. I mean, you were asking a question about the divestiture, right? The cogeneration.
Yes.
Look, as I believe Eduardo just mentioned, we have seen a lot of interest in these assets. We went already through the first round. We received more than 40, we signed more than 40 NDAs. And we are now moving into the second phase. And we are going to select a few of those so that we can continue due diligence and everything. And we would expect that by June this year, we shall have a much more precise idea of what we're going to do. I just, as Eduardo said, you know, we are doing this for two reasons. Number one reason, because we don't want to increase our leverage beyond the two, you know, the 2-1 EBITDA, I mean, net debt to EBITDA. We're not going to go beyond that. But the other reason, and this is a more fundamental and structural reason, honestly, I think these assets, as part of Alpek, are valued in a certain way. You know, if you look at the Alpek multiple, EBITDA, you have a certain multiple that you are familiar with, 6, 7, whatever, you know. And I think that we know that there are certain investors that, given the stability of the cash flows, are willing to pay a significant premium above that. And that's precisely the other reason we're exploring this, because we do believe we can unlock a lot of value.
Okay.
In Alpek. And again, for the time being, we're concentrating on the Cosoleacaque cogeneration, but in the future, we could look at Altamira. But we need, in order to get the good value, normally you would need to have the cash flows stabilized and remove the execution risk and have all the contracts, the long-term contracts signed. So that's why, you know, you have to have a certain timing. In the case of Cosoleacaque, the plant is operating extremely well, 97 plus efficiency uptime, and cost, very competitive cost. And we have contracts, I don't know, I mean, the average, I think, is 13-year contracts, long-term contracts. So it has all the ingredients already to capture what we believe will be a very attractive valuation. And we believe we're going to have a much clearer picture in two or three months after we go through the due diligence of the different investors.
Okay, and Pepe, maybe I misunderstood, but did you mention that Alpek could potentially sell a minority stake at Suape in Brazil, like for a local operator?
Eduardo did mention that, but again, it would be a minor stake. I mean, something which would be more in the below 20%.
Okay.
And it would be for two reasons. Again, one reason would be, of course, to reduce the financing required for acquisition.
Yep.
But Eduardo also mentioned, and he was very specific about it, if we do this, not only do we do it for the financing portion, but we do it with a potential partner that will help us bring some sort of synergies or some improvements in the way we can operate in Brazil.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Next question comes from Chelsea Colon with TIAA.
Hi, I have two questions, which I believe are probably related. I noticed that your liquidity has tightened quite a bit this quarter, given cash balance coming down and short-term debt going up, which I suspect is probably due to the net working capital requirement in the quarter. And I recall that at the end of last quarter, you were guiding for a positive contribution from working capital this year on the cash flow side. So I'm wondering if that's still the expectation this year and how that will play out and just if you're expecting the liquidity to get a little more comfortable throughout the year or if you need to refinance some debt.
Okay, well, Chelsea, I think it's a good question for sure. Look, you're right. Our liquidity during the first quarter was not as good as we expected, but there were three main reasons for that. Number one, remember, first quarter we paid dividends, so that has an impact. Number two, CapEx. Our CapEx program is still strong, mostly due to the Altamira cogeneration project. But number three, and you are completely right, the increase in working capital was sort of unexpected for us. It was unexpected because, as I mentioned, we're not expecting such a steep increase in propylene prices. And we were not expecting an increase as well in styrene monomer prices. I mentioned this before, styrene monomer. But styrene monomer also, during this quarter, that all of a sudden there were three plants, all the styrene plants in the U.S., three of those that were shut down at the same time. And those three plants represent 40% of the production capacity. Two of these were plant shutdowns, but one was on plant shutdown. And the plant that shut down unexpectedly is by itself 20% of the capacity. Now most of these plants are coming out of their shutdowns, and the plant that shut down unexpectedly, I think, is coming back in May or June at the latest. So the situation has normalized. But just to give you an idea, prices of styrene as well, which were in the 50 cents per pound, reach a high of, you know, in the spot market of 80 cents per pound for a while. So again, all of these unexpected increases in raw materials impact significantly. I mean, we, in order for us to compensate for that, we have to significantly increase our prices. So we did increase our prices in the quarter close to 10%. And we were not expecting such a big increase in our guidance. Okay, so for that reason, we had this unexpected negative cash flow to maintain working capital. But as I mentioned also, second quarter, this is going to come down very quickly. Okay, because prices are already coming down. Propylene, as I told you, from 52 in March, is already around 40 in April, even lower than that. Styrene, which, as I mentioned, reached the 80 at some point in time, is now in the 50, low 50s. And you know, paraxylene is also coming down a little bit. Not so much, like 5%. But that will give us a relief in terms of our liquidity situation. I don't know, Eduardo, you want to answer the other question, the second question?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Chelsea, for your question. We do expect, as Pepe just described, to have a recovery in terms of liquidity from the net working capital for the rest of the year, just as we build into our guidance for the year. There is really significant uncertainty regarding the evolution of the feedstock prices in the next coming months, but thinking that they are coming down in general terms, and the initiatives that we have to improve our working capital investment, we do expect to have a recovery. For this quarter, the main line items where we had to an increase in working capital were, as expected, inventory and accounts receivable because of the feedstock price increase as well as our prices increases.
Okay, thank you.
One additional comment, Chelsea, that I think might be important for you as well. In terms of days of working capital, we had a decrease of 2-3 days during the quarter. So it's not a matter of increasing the days. It's just a matter of increasing the revenues.
And then in terms of the short-term debt, are you expecting to just repay that with cash flows in the coming quarters or roll it over? Or what's the expectation there?
Yes, we do expect to reduce it in the coming quarters.
Okay.
Next question comes from Pierre Sefa with Silver River Capital.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my question. I think, you know, you've already answered quite a few of the questions I had, but just, I guess, concerning the coastal cogeneration plan, I'd like to understand what does the client profile look like once you sell that asset? Alpek remain an important client of that plant if it is sold to a third-party company? You know, how do you think about that? And you mentioned you have, on average, you know, 30-year, you know, trading contracts. What percentage of those, of the plant EBITDA, does Alpek represent? If you could, please discuss that.
Okay. For sure, if we divest this plant, we will divest it, and all of the long-term contracts that we have will remain with the new investor or the new buyer. And we are a significant, well, not only a significant, we are practically the only, client or customer for this team. So all of the steam produced by this cogeneration plant will buy it. Okay, so we do have a contract today with the cogeneration for our plants in Coso Lecaque. So we will continue to buy that part of the that part of steam. So all of the steam will continue to buy. And then in terms of the power, we buy only a relatively, I would say, a small portion of that. A lot of the most important customers of power in those, or clients of power in these plants, are really outside companies with whom we have these long-term contracts. So on that part, I think they will remain the same. Many years ago, in the 90s, we did a similar transaction. We had our own cogeneration plant in Altamira, which was called Enertec, and we sold that plant. I mean, we developed the project, we signed contracts, with ourselves and with somebody else, and eventually we sold it to a third party, and it's exactly similar to what we're doing. In this particular case with Cosulacaque, we're even considering a partial divestiture. Let me explain why. Some of the interested buyers are funds or pension funds, and in some cases they are asking us if we could maintain a certain percentage in the ownership of the company, let's say 20% or something like that. And we are, of course, more than willing to do that. Because if we do that and we remain operating the plant, that gives us a lot of comfort. Because at the end of the day, for us, it's extremely important that this plant operates very well. Because our facilities in that area, PTA and PET, are very much dependent on that power and steam. So we are even considering that possibility. I don't know if this answers your question.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from Pedro Madeiros with Citigroup.
Okay, good morning, guys. Congratulations for the results. I have three questions. Thank you for taking those. First one is, I noticed that sales volumes relative to your capacity on the PNC division in first quarter has declined a lot year on year, okay? And you make some comments on the press release about it, but do you mind to walk us through the main reasons for the decline in the first quarter, and in that context, talk about the progress for completing the problem spheres in this year and how that can potentially lead for higher volumes for that division throughout the next quarters? My second question is if you can give additional color on the construction progress of Altamira relative to the original schedule. I had the impression, given the CapEx reported by the company, that there could be some upside risk on the schedule, or might it be too early to tell? So if you can comment on that. And last question is, Eduardo or Pepe, do you mind to comment on how much was the, or what was the 2016 EBITDA for Cosulacaque, so we can make our own sensitivity and gauge potential valuation in a transaction for the asset?
Okay. Pedro, just let me make sure you understood. Your first question was with regards to the volume reduction was in what product, PET?
In the plastics and chemicals division, which I suppose is coming out of polypropylene.
Okay, I will explain to you very quickly. In polypropylene, the reason for the decrease in volume was mostly polypropylene. And the reason for the decrease in polypropylene volume has a lot to do with lower availability of propylene from Pemex in Mexico. We had less availability of propylene. Again, as I think I mentioned to you, propylene is produced in Mexico in particular. All of the propylene comes from refineries. So during this first quarter, the production of refineries in Mexico was not very strong, and that's why we had less supply of propylene. And as a result, we had no propylene. We reduced our sales. I mean, our import of propylene was, you know, with the prices, as you saw, with these prices as going as high as they did, we didn't want to buy more propylene and end up with a lot of inventory at the end of the quarter. So we were very careful in not importing more, and for that reason, we you know, sort of reduced this volume in polypropylene. And now, and this actually links very well with your question about the spheres. The propylene spheres are ready. The project is finished. Mechanical completion is finished. We are in the last steps of commissioning the project. But I think as we speak, those propylene spheres will become available. And what is going to be the benefit of those? Well, I think the basic benefit is that it will allow us more flexibility, particularly to import propylene from other parts of the world, propylene that is not polymer grade. We have today one tank where we import propylene grade, polymer grade propylene, PGP. But we cannot import, since we have only one tank, we cannot import refinery grade or chemical grade. Now, with these two spheres, we're going to have the flexibility to import either one of those. And as you know, prices of both products, propylene and refinery, are significantly lower than polymer grade. So with these spheres, we'll have flexibility to import those at more attractive prices. And by doing that, also, we will be able to increase our volume in Mexico. That is really the main reason for those spheres, to give us more flexibility to import.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Eduardo Altamirano with HSBC.
Hi, gentlemen. I actually have two questions. Number one would be on your dividend guidance. You said that you may be reducing your dividend. My understanding is that you have a stated range between 70 and 120 million. The last one was about 142 million. What would be sort of the expectation there? Would you be going below even the stated range, or kind of just to get an understanding there? And as well, in terms of share buybacks, it appears that you did not undertake any in the past quarter. Should we expect this to be the same going forward? And within that vein, if you do engage them at a certain point, would the expectation be that you only engage them when your ROE is above, let's say, your 15%, let's say, investment threshold for, let's say, projects? Thanks.
Eduardo, why don't you ask these questions?
Sure. Thank you, Pepe. And thanks, Eduardo, for your questions. Regarding the dividend, that is, as I mentioned before during the discussion of how we plan to finance the PQS acquisition, that is one alternative that we have, either reducing the dividends for this year or in the future for the following years. Today is too early to tell, Eduardo. We haven't made any decision. Things we need to see how the acquisition evolves regarding timing, regarding the approval of the CARE, as well as how the monetization of the cogeneration assets evolves, depending on how much we are able to capture, how much funds and how much we lack, we will probably present an alternative to our board and make a decision. So really, it is too early to tell. Regarding our share buyback program, really the intention of the program was to provide a little more sustainability to the volume that is being traded in the stock exchange. And it is true, the last few months we have reduced the amount of operations that we have done through this program. However, the program is still in place. When we consider it convenient to restart to help the volume, the trading volume, we plan to do so.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next question comes from Gilberto Garcia with Barclays. Mr. Garcia, check your mute function. You are live.
Hello. Can you hear me now? Hi, good morning. So a few questions, if I may, on the potential for monetization. Does this include the Altamira project? You have talked about the projects that you have ongoing in Cosolacaque, and obviously with Altamira still under construction, there are there's no activity yet, but is it something that you would consider divesting as well? And related to that, how much of the $350 million required for the project have you already invested? And then two questions on Brazil. If you were to receive approval for the transaction at the end of this year, would you expect the assets to contribute to EBITDA the next year? And the second one is the potential for a minority partner. Is a minority partner possibility still under analysis, or have you already decided to seek a minority partner for the less than 20% stake that you have discussed? Thank you.
Okay, Gilberto, let me answer your question about Altamira. And I take the opportunity to answer a previous question regarding Altamira. In Altamira, the project is right on schedule. It's right on target. We're slightly more than 50% of the project. The project is on time and the project is on cost, which is also very important. So we're making a lot of progress, and that project is running very, very smoothly. So I believe we will be on stream the fourth quarter next year as planned. So that's a good situation. With respect to the monetization of Altamira, we are going to be open to different possibilities. I think, again, irrespective of the liquidity needs or whatever, or the financing needs, we do believe that as I mentioned before, that these assets in the right hand, there are investors that can pay more than what our investors in Alpek can pay. So we see this as an opportunity to enhance value to our shareholders, honestly, and significant value, by the way. So yeah, we're going to be considering that at the time. The thing is, in these assets, I mean, the valuation depends on the PPAs or contracts, sales contracts that you have, and valuation also depends on the execution risk. It's not the same. You have the plant operating for 2, 3, 4 months at the capacity and the efficiency that you expected to produce, and our concept is that probably a better time for monetizing partially or totally those assets is once you have resolved those issues. Once you have the contracts, when the plant is running well, and that's why we're going to be open looking at that possibility, because we do believe we're creating shareholder value. But we don't have to do it now. We have been approached. Some of the investors are also very interested in participating in some way in Altamira. So, it's going to depend on how they value the asset. That's the biggest factor, I guess. In terms of Brazil, your question was, if I recall correctly, if we're going to be able to generate EBITDA next year. Well, we better do. We better generate some EBITDA next year, okay? Otherwise, I'm going to be in trouble.
Okay, and lastly, on the potential for a minority partner, is this...
Look, honestly... we're just talking to you about that as part of the different options we are undertaking. The minority partner, and I think Eduardo said that, is not an essential, is not an essential part of the financing of the deal. And the only reason why we would go ahead with a minority partner is if we saw he could add value, significant value, to our operation in Brazil. Okay?
I would add, Gilberto, that as you can imagine, given Pepe's comments, we are at a very early stage regarding the discussions with the minority partner. I would like also to add from a previous question that Pedro Medeiros asked regarding the EBITDA of COSO. So you can have an idea of how much we can expect regarding the monetization of this asset. As you're probably aware, there have been recent increases in power prices in Mexico the last month. We do expect for this cogeneration COSO cogeneration business to generate between $20 and $25 million EBITDA this year.
We can now move on to the next question, please, operator.
Yes, sir. We move to Veronica Renero with BNP Paribas.
Thank you. My question has been answered, so no longer needed. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Veronica.
Thank you.
Next, move to Sarah Leshner with Barclays.
Hi, my questions have also been answered. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Great, Sarah. Thank you.
And once again, as a reminder, it is star one to be placed into the queue. We move to Rodrigo Caballero with LCA Capital.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to clarify some numbers regarding the M&G agreement. Until the fourth quarter in 2016, Alpek had invested or paid about $435 million in the tolling agreement. And they also stated that they entered an additional loan agreement regarding about $60 million. Could you provide the details on these numbers up to the first quarter of 2017, please?
Okay, yes, Rodrigo, your numbers are correct, 435 and then a loan of 60 up until the end of last year. And I think we just mentioned that this year, first quarter, we provide another 30. So it's 435, yeah, so it's 435 plus 90.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
And with no further questions in queue, I'd like to turn it back to Mr. Lozano for closing remarks.
I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Please feel free to contact us in case you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a nice day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect.